Access Cast, an Accessibility initiative, presents Unstoppable Mindset, the podcast where inclusion, diversity, and the unexpected meet. Hi, I'm Michael Hinkson, Chief Vision Officer for Accessibility and the author of the number one New York Times bestselling book, Thunderdog, the story of a blind man, his guide dog, and the triumph of trust. Thanks for joining me on my podcast as we explore our own blinding fears of inclusion, unacceptance, and our resistance to change. We will discover the idea that no matter the situation or the people we encounter, our own fears and prejudices often are our strongest barriers to moving forward. The Unstoppable Mindset podcast is sponsored by Accessibility. That's ACCESSIBE. Visit www.accessibility.com to learn how you can make your website accessible for persons with disabilities and to help make the internet fully inclusive by the year 2025. Glad you dropped by. We're happy to meet you and to have you here with us. And welcome to another episode of Unstoppable Mindset, the podcast where inclusion, diversity, and the unexpected meet. And it's always fun if we get to have something unexpected happen on the show and sometimes unexpected guests, and we'll see how it goes today. We have, I think, a very interesting person for you to meet today. He's someone that I met through Accessibility, but he has a fascinating story to tell. And let's get right to it. So I'd like you to meet Josh Bassel. Josh, welcome to Unstoppable Mindset.
Michael, it's great to be here today.
Thanks for coming. So you, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about you?
All right, so my name is Josh Bassel. I live outside of Washington, D.C. in Maryland. My life changed forever when I was a teenager. I was 18 years old. I went on a family vacation to the beach, and a wave picked me up and threw me over my boogie board and slammed me headfirst against the ocean floor. That day, I shattered my neck and became a C4-5 quadriplegic.
So, needless to say, you had a life-changing event. What was your reaction? How did you feel? You must have experienced some fear and lots of uncertainty. How did you work through all of that?
So I guess we could start with the initial fear. So like when I had my injury, like I just remember hearing a loud crack and it like reverberated throughout my entire body. And all of a sudden I couldn't move at all. And I was face down in the water. I was unable to like scream for help. I was unable to turn my body. And just kind of was just floating in the ocean. And all I could do was try to remain as calm as possible and hope that my friends would see me floating and would come out and grab me and save my life. And luckily they did that day. And then when it comes to fear of kind of transitioning into a new world of functionality and a new world of kind of dependency in so many ways. That was definitely a huge change. I went from a college athlete to someone that couldn't even brush his teeth anymore. And it was a rude awakening, but so much of it kind of for me to overcome it was about perspective and having a different mindset of, you know, there's so much with my injury that I can't do, but I choose to not focus on that. I focus on what I can do. And there's lots of little things that allow me to really always proactively continue to move forward.
So when we talk about the things that you can't do, I guess, you know, as a person who happens to be blind, you know, I hear all the time about how you can't do this or you can't do that. How do you react to that being in a chair and being a quadriplegic? And I guess what I'm getting at, I'll tell you kind of my thoughts is, is it really so much you can't do or you have to do in a different way?
So for me, it's like before my injury, I did things 1 million ways. After my injury, I get to do it 1 million new ways. And it's different, but different can still be fun. Different can still be meaningful. It's just, you know, the way I brush my teeth now is not with my hands. Yeah. I do it through the hands of a caregiver. I, you know, doing a different sport. Before my injury, I skied on my two feet. Now I ski in a sled with somebody's behind me holding it. And, you know, I'm flying down the mountain. So there's a million different ways that I get to do new things. And it's just a matter of having the right creativity. And at the end of the day, it's really having a willingness to try and put yourself out there and to experience all that life has to offer.
The founder of the National Federation of the Blind, Jacobus Tenbroek, once wrote an article, and Tenbroek was a constitutional law scholar. He wrote an article called A Preference for Equality. And he talked about equality. I'd be interested in your thoughts on this. And what he said is that a lot of people say, well, it's only equal if I give you a pencil and paper and you write. You know, that's equal. We're giving you the same things we give everyone else. And what he said was that equality doesn't mean that. Equality means that you have the same opportunity, but you may use different techniques, different tools, but that you at least are allowed to, or you are given the opportunity to use those tools to be able to accomplish the same task.
So yeah, with equality, with that, it's, we all have our own unique experiences on how we do things, how we experience life. So, you know, having an equal opportunity to experience and to participate and to have different options to do it the way that you would like to do it or the way that you can do it. But being a part of this world, you know, so much of the internet is about, you know, people talk about accessibility. But, you know, for me, it's almost more important for it to be about usability and usable. And it's like there's different things of that nature that you can kind of talk about, kind of equal access and equal this, but it's for me, it's like, is it going to be functional to my life, to my unique world? And there's so many different types of disabilities, so many different types of functionalities. And it's important that it works for the person that is trying to be a part of it.
Which is really the whole point, that equality isn't about doing something exactly the same way with the same stuff. Equality is being able to accomplish the same task. I thought it was interesting years ago, was it Jack Nicklaus who had a hip replacement or someone and needed to use a golf cart? And so there were some issues about him going on golf courses with a golf cart when everyone else had to walk. And they had to work through that.
Yeah, it was a golfer around the 2000s that ended up having to do that. And it went to the Supreme Court and they found that he was able to use the golf cart and that it was a reasonable accommodation.
Well, for blind people who wanted to take the LSAT and go into law, there were a lot of challenges because the testing programs required that you took the test in a certain way. And eventually, at least they provided some equipment, but it wasn't necessarily the equipment that blind people used. And so it really put people taking the test at a disadvantage. And again, it went to the Supreme Court. Ironically, lawyers of all people who ought to really be upholding the rights of all people, but it had to go to the Supreme Court before a final ruling came down that said, well, of course, people can use the screen readers and the technologies that they are used to take the test.
No, and that's, you know, that's always kind of boggled my mind how even within the LSAT, how there's so many different discriminatory factors that have existed over the years. When I, you know, graduated college, I decided to go to law school and I took the LSAT myself. And during that time, everybody that had a disability that had an accommodation, so anybody with accommodation, they created a flag on the test. And basically it told every single place that you applied, every school that you applied, that this person has a disability. And only after, while I was in law school, there was a class action lawsuit that I believe originated in California that ended up like saying that you can't do that. You can't, that is completely against the ADA. you cannot be able to disclose that a person has a disability during the application process. And there was, you know, a class action settlement across the United States. But it's kind of crazy how that stuff is there and continues to happen.
Well, before your accident when you were 18, and of course you're not that old now, you're at least 25, right? So before 36. Your ac- I know, before you 36. So before you were put in a chair, you had your accident. What were your career goals?
Before my injury, I was a business major and an art minor in college. And for me, I've always loved the stock market, so I wanted to become an investment banker. And that was the route that I was trying to pursue. I had like a dream internship the summer of my injury, and I would have loved to continue to work for my boss that summer as a career afterwards. But definitely my injury flipped things upside down and changed life forever. And I quickly learned that my voice and my mind were my best assets. Physically, I was limited in what I could do, but mentally and through my advocacy skills, I could do great things. And that's when I decided to go back to community college. Then I went to undergrad and then graduated magna cum laude through law school. And it was definitely a long adventure with the education that I decided to go through. But in the end, it was totally worthwhile and has opened so many doors to and opportunities within the employment world. And I've very much enjoyed working for the since 2013.
So why did you decide to switch and go from investment banking into law?
So basically just to become as strong of an advocate as I could possibly be. You know, with undergrad, I was a communication major and saw my voice getting really strong and my ability to influence others and change the world around me. And then I just knew law school would give me a unique mindset and approach to really taking it to the next level. And law school is incredible. It teaches you kind of how to think like a lawyer. And then you have to get in the world and you actually have to kind of have a specialty to take on. And that's when I took on the medical malpractice and catastrophic injuries and helped families all across the country through lawsuits and helping them navigate kind of also how to get the community supports they need for independent living when it comes to caregiving or pursuing vocation through the vocational system. There's so many different elements to what happens after a catastrophic injury to kind of reenter society and actually have a better quality of life.
But you worked through it. You chose to not give up. You chose to move forward and do something with your life, which is, of course, the whole point, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's life is too short not to live, love, and laugh, and to put yourself out there to be the best you. And, you know, before my injury, you know, or let's say after my injury, like, yes, I have a different body, but I'm still me. I just have, you know, a sexy power wheelchair to get me around, and I've got different technology and different caregiving supports that allow me to do things that I would have done before. But it's definitely one of those things that, like, you just I try to let families know that within this life. Like, I've mentored thousands of families through my nonprofit, Determined to Heal. And one of the big things is after an injury, you need to learn how to advocate for yourself. You need to learn how to become your own best advocate, because nobody's going to fight harder for you than you're going to fight for yourself in your life. So learning kind of what it is to give you the best opportunities, to give you the best supports, and to be able to be that captain of the ship as you're going along this life journey, it gives you great power in what direction you're going to go. And it gives you the ability to, you know, accept help. And that accepting help is not a weakness. A lot of people think of an accommodation school as a weakness. No, It creates an even playing field to allow you to show what you have, and being able to get support through friends, family, caregivers to help you part of along your journey is just, it gives you extra a boost along your way, along your voyage. It's basically having crewmates. Yeah. Instead of sailing a ship of one, you're sailing a ship of 10. That's a much easier voyage.
The issue of accepting help is one, though, where you need to be the one to decide what help and when you need help, which is always, of course, an issue. People, most of the time, want to help. And sometimes help when you don't need help, which can be a challenge in of itself.
Yeah, no, it's hard. A lot of persons with disabilities are very stubborn. I see it a lot within the paralysis community, the difference between a quadriplegic and a paraplegic. So a quadriplegic is somebody that has immobility in all four extremities. A paraplegic has immobility in two extremities. And so often paraplegics, in many ways, they want to do everything on their own and show their independence, which gives them their power. With a quadriplegic, you'll see somebody is way more open to receiving help and is accepting of it and is willing to like try and train somebody to help them do different tasks. But it's the different mindsets of, are you, it doesn't really, for me, it's accepting help doesn't matter if you're paraplegic, quadriplegic, person without a disability. It's just a matter of opening your arms to being able to allow others to be a part of your life and contribute. So many people just want to help because they want to give. It's a good feeling to give. And it's kind of a different dynamic depending on the personality of who you're talking to.
Sure. And the reality is that we all should be more interested in receiving help when we need it. And we should also be willing to give help and offer help. You know, I tell people all the time, look, don't assume I need help and don't operate under the assumption that I want help crossing the street. There's never anything wrong with asking if I want some help, but accept the answer if I say no, because there are also a lot of times that I don't want help. For example, when I used to travel around the World Trade Center and looked like I was lost, I probably was. And the reason I was lost was because I worked at getting lost so I could figure out more about how to travel around the center and learn things. And there would be times I would ask questions, but it was important to learn the complex because I wasn't going to use the same visual cues that you would use.
I love that about persons with disabilities, that we are faced with so many barriers on a daily basis, but that allows us to be kind of really fine-tuned problem solvers. Like we're really able to like figure out, you know, how to overcome challenges, how to get to where we need to go, how to complete puzzles, how to complete, well, you name it. And it's like the practice that we do every single day gives us a special kind of ability beyond many other people. And it's, I think this is one of our greatest contributions that we can give to the workforce in general, is that, you know, you give us a problem within a company, we're going to be able to approach it probably a lot differently than other employees that you have, just because we do it every day. We put our 10,000 hours in to become expert problem solvers.
I know that you have seen this and seen some of the statistics both before and in your time at Accessibility, and we'll talk about that. But one of the things that we both get to talk about on a regular basis is the fact that when companies decide to make themselves inclusive, whether it be in their advertising, whether it be in their hiring practices and so on, but when they decide to make themselves inclusive to persons with disabilities, the reality is we also tend to be more loyal because we know One, it's harder to find a job when we're facing a 65%+ unemployment rate among employable people with disabilities. And two, that it's harder to deal with various aspects of a company if they don't make it more inclusive. So when we find companies and organizations that are inclusive, we tend to be more loyal to them.
Absolutely. It's data, statistics, you name it, studies have been done and conducted that have proven that the disability community is either the most brand loyal community in the world, in the United States. And it's because, you know, we're not always taken care of correctly, but when we are, it's just, we don't forget it. And we advocate and share with friends, family. We let others in the community know that this company, this organization gets it. They're doing it right. They're welcoming. And those good experiences, we don't forget it. And we look forward to those moments when somebody gets it. And it's kind of, I think it's amazing that we're having so many more of these conversations around inclusion and disability, and that companies are starting to get that this needs to be a part of their business. It needs to be a part of their business culture. And the more that we do that, I think we're going to see some major changes coming up in the years to come. But obviously, we're still a long way away. But it's, I've heard more about this in the last, 2 years than I did in the last, 17 years of my injury.
Well, it's true. And we need to be more a part of the conversation. How do we get more people to include us in the conversation? And it's all about education, but how do we get people to accept us and include us as a class in the conversation of life, if you will?
For me, it's always about having a seat at the table. Too often, persons with disabilities are an afterthought because they never had a seat at the table from the beginning. And they were just then recognized later on when enough noise was made that somebody was like, all right, now let's deal with the disability factor of our business or of society or of this law, or you name it. It's just, we don't have enough representation in all aspects of society, in my opinion. Whether it's within the legislature, within the business world, within education, transportation, we need to have way more persons with disabilities being employed in positions of leadership, being able to have people get it from the top down that disability matters and that disability is something that it's a way of approaching a system in place of availing inclusion and providing accessibility, providing options for all abilities. And it's for me, it's like, it's a win-win. If when organizations get it, when legislators get it and they incorporate it, they're actually just making us stronger. Everything they put forward ends up becoming stronger because it ends up working for more and more people and giving more options. It's people look at curb cuts and, that's one of those things that it's made for persons with disabilities, but guess what? Everybody that uses it is benefiting from it and they don't want to live without it. So being able to put together more kind of inclusive pieces of the puzzle to society, for me, is just a win-win, but we need to have more people at the table to be able to make sure it gets done.
Yeah. So you went off to law school. Where'd you go?
David A. Clark School of Law. That's the DC Public Interest Law School.
Cool. So you went, you graduated, then what did you do?
So I immediately went to work. So while I was in law school, I interned for a federal judge. I then worked at a law firm and then worked at the U.S. Attorney's Office, worked on the Health Committee under Senator Harkin. And then I ended up getting an internship at my current employer. And after finishing law school, I just continued working with him. And it's been there since 2013 and I've loved every moment of it.
It's fun, especially when you can blaze a trail.
It's you know, the thing with lawyers is all lawyers are, for the most part, nerds. Like, they're just very smart. They love either studying, reading, or are willing to go the extra mile. Like, anybody that ends up doing law school and taking the bar exam, that's a lot of work. It's a lot of time, a lot of energy spent away from friends, family. It's a commitment. So most attorneys are nerds, but as a medical malpractice attorney and catastrophic injury attorney with a significant disability, I love it because I get to be an empathetic nerd. I get to be, you know, there for families in ways that most attorneys can't. I get what they're going through. I understand what they need in place to have a better quality of life. I can communicate with them. And it's most cases that we take can take anywhere from 2 to 4 years to either settle or to go through the legal process of getting a judgment through the courts. And even then, sometimes there's delays because it gets appealed. It's a long process, but as an attorney with a catastrophic injury myself, I really enjoy it because I get to connect with my families more than anything.
You must be in a position to help make a more powerful case because, as you said, you have a catastrophic injury yourself. You've been through it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It resonates, I think, with the jury. I think it resonates with the judge. It also resonates with the defense that's on the other side when you're doing depositions or you're doing negotiations. And they're like, this person doesn't need this. And then you're like, you know what? They actually do. And I can have some lived experiences beyond the experts that we bring to the table that are saying what we are arguing. But, you know, so much of when it comes to bringing cases, it comes down to the battle of the experts. And both sides end up getting someone that argues one angle, and then it's up to the jury to decide what is fact and what is fiction.
So you're working for a private firm today?
Yes, it's a plaintiff's firm. So we only represent families that have been injured.
That have been injured, right. Well, so in addition to doing that kind of work, you've obviously gotten some involvement in doing things like web accessibility and so on. How did all that come about?
So I'm passionate about breaking down barriers for persons with disabilities, whether it's in the employment world, transportation, independent living. And when I learned that less than 2% of the internet meets accessibility guidelines, I wanted to do something about it. And I knew that I could proactively kind of, you know, I always try to first figure out what is the problem and what are the best options going forward to come up with a solution, or at least to be able to have a better approach at addressing the problem, both in the short term and long term. And so much with the internet is about scalability. You know, we're talking about hundreds of millions of websites that remain inaccessible. And when I learned about accessibility, I did my research. I had different friends in the disability community give me their sense of it and to test different products that were out there. And what I learned was accessibility was the real deal, and that this could be a great way of changing the world of the internet. And COVID was happening at the time, which for me, the internet became that much more important to be able to allow persons with disabilities to have access to the products, information, and services that, as we well know, the internet provides. And, you know, having access to that improves quality of life and opportunity. And I wanted to do something about it.
How did you discover accessibility?
So a childhood friend of mine ended up moving over to Israel and joined Accessibility's team in their HR department. And she ended up connecting me with with the founders of Accessibe, and I spoke with them. And next thing I knew, we were collaborating. They wanted more persons with disabilities to have a seat at the table within the organization so that they could learn and they can improve and they can become a better business, not only running the company, but also for serving the community that they, you know, on a mission to change the lives of. And, you know, hearing that and seeing that and being a part of that since February, I've been wowed by them as a company, and Accessibe is just doing all the right things. And it's, it's been a long way since February, but it's always been a forward moving, a progression. And as an advocate, I love moving forward.
What are some of the specific problems that you face in accessing the internet?
So it's basically navigating a page is one thing, you know, being able to go from start to finish and checking out fully. Now, I've been on a website where I'm using my Dragon actually speaking, and I can't jump to a different form to be able to fill out my contact information, my address, or do a drop down to be able to see what's there. Like, it's, you know, if I'm only able to access specific parts of a website, I'm missing out on all the other parts that everybody else is afforded without a disability. I use my mouth controller to control my mouse. I also use an on-screen keyboard to navigate a web page. I use voice dictation to type. And I also use a screen reader for reading. So I have multiple different technologies that I'm using at once. And if a website has accessibility built into it, or usability built into it, I'm able to navigate it so much better and gain from it the way that it was meant to be gained. That people put information on the website for a purpose. And, you know, it's just a matter of, are you going to be able to access it or only be able to see or experience half of what the website's truly trying to show?
I know for me, using a screen reader exclusively to hear what's on a web page, when we deal with images where there are no descriptions, or we deal with an element that requires you to use a mouse, or it expects you to use a mouse, so as you scroll through items, the screen refreshes, which means you really can't get to see what all the options are without the screen refreshing, and it takes you forever to go through it. Those are just two examples of some of the access that we face, that I face, and other people who are blind face, and you face some of those same things as well. And the reality is, and I've said it before, and I'll continue to say it, we live in such a marvelous technological world where it is so easy to make all of this stuff fully inclusive, and it's in some ways becoming less inclusive because we make it more visual, or we want to make it more automatic to just use that little mouse to scroll around a screen. And we forget that that doesn't make the website inclusive for everyone.
It doesn't. And, you know, we making the internet work for everyone has not been easy over, you know, the past 25 years, really, of the internet being, you know, more mainstream. But it's, you know, keep working towards it. And the thing that I love about Accessibe is that there's many different profiles for many different disabilities and abilities, and then being able to use those profiles, but then also to be able to have customized options below that to even further make it accessible or usable, or making it work on how you personally want to navigate a website. And so many people with disabilities, you know, have multiple disabilities. So like being able to like have usability options for that is, you know, through Accessibe's AI powered solution, it's like there's nothing else out there that exists that I've been able to use that. I have a physical disability, I have ADHD, and I have a reading disability. So incorporating all three of those things sometimes makes websites a little difficult to navigate. But then when you have the AI-powered solution, I'm then able to customize with the mobility profile. I'm able to customize with other options with ADHD as well. Like it's incredible what you can do when you give people choice and power and how they want to navigate.
Tell me about the ADHD profile.
So the ADHD profile basically, you know, allows you to have a better, I'd say it blocks out kind of the top and bottom of the of your eyes so that it's kind of blurred, not blurred a little bit, but it's darkened, but then it has a focus area where you can go up and down the screen so that your eyes focus on one particular area without having distractions from all over the page. So many websites, they try to grab you here and there and everywhere. And you're with ADHD, the littlest thing can like can pull your attention away.
Can distract you, yeah.
I always like to, you know, there's a great Disney Pixar movie called Up. And there's a dog, yeah. And every time the dog sees a squirrel, it goes squirrel. And like that's too often on a website. If I see something, my mind goes away, and then it's hard to get my mind back to where it needs to go to get the most out of the website or what my task at hand.
So does it prevent pop-ups, for example?
I'm not sure. I don't think it prevents pop-ups.
But it prevents the visual stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It creates kind of that perfect kind of line of sight of where to focus on and direct. I know the epilepsy profile prevents the pop-ups and prevents anything that is blinking or has motion.
But the point is that there are a number of different profiles, and it doesn't necessarily deal with all disabilities within the artificial intelligence system. For example, there's not a lot for persons who are deaf or hard of hearing, but the other aspects of accessibility do address that, dealing with the ability to have video captioning and so on. So there are other things that accessibility now does, and we both have talked about the fact that it's a growth issue, that accessibility has grown to recognize and put in place the procedures to deal with that.
I love that they now have accessibility now as remediation services for PDFs. They have remediation for video captioning. And it's like all of these different pieces of the puzzle is what it takes to make a website accessible. And they're also doing manual remediation and going in and making that necessary changes either from the beginning or later after. Like there's so many different ways of making a website accessible. Obviously the best way is to always do it right from the beginning.
Yeah.
And, you know, I even say even having a website that was perfectly done from the beginning, but then adding the AI powered solution then gives you that much more power and choice in how a person with a disability or multiple disabilities can experience a website. And it feels very welcoming when it's done like that.
So what do you do for accessibility, since you're busy with a job and at a law firm and so on, but you do work with accessibility? What do you do?
I'm the community relations manager. So I bring in persons with disabilities, disability-focused organizations to be able to work with us on our different projects and initiatives. One of my favorites is called Access Find, where we are right now, if you go to Google and you type in a website, you have no idea if that website that comes up of the 10 websites through the search are going to be accessible. More likely than not, it's based just on statistics of 2% of the internet being accessible. It's not going to be. And that's a frustrating experience of not having confidence in knowing whether or not you're going to be able to navigate that website fully. So what Access Find is going to do, it's only going to house accessible websites through its database. So you go there and you're going to be able to know that all of the search results are accessible, and we're building it out. We have over 40 founding member organizations that we're working with to make sure that we do it right with. And all these organizations have a seat at the table as we're building out the beta website. So it's going to be very exciting, but come 2022, Access Find is going to go live for the world. And it's just, I just can't wait for it to be a resource and a service for persons with disabilities.
How do you think that the world will react to Access Find?
I think it's going to be one of those things that everything around web accessibility, we need to provide education for. I think Access Find in its own right is an incredible educational tool, acknowledging the fact that so much of the net is inaccessible. And that, you know, the Googles of the world had an opportunity to do something to make it easier. And they never took the opportunity or they made a business decision that, you know what, is not worth addressing this. And the fact that Accessibility took the time, spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to make this in existence, I think it just says a lot about Accessibility as a company, that they care, that they want to do something proactively about making the internet more accessible. And they wanted to create a product by the with the community, for the community. And that I think it's just going to be a powerful message to share with the disability community and nonprofits that Access Find is going to be a great tool for them.
It will be the first time that it will truly be possible for people to expect, when they're searching for something, they're searching for a website or a company or an organization. It'll be the first time where people with disabilities can truly expect that they will be searching among companies that are inclusive or are accessible. What happens if we find one that isn't an Access Find? What happens with that?
So are you saying a website is put on Access Find and it's not accessible?
Or becomes inaccessible.
So that's just an opportunity right there for the community to be able to voice and to be able to share with that website, you know, that, you know, something happened over time that, yes, maybe your website was accessible at a moment, but then over time it became inaccessible to the point where it needs to be addressed. You know, the thing with web accessibility is not something that it's like you do it once and it's forever. Like, web accessibility is a moving, a growing, evolving project where you have to have things in place to address it consistently, because websites are consistently changing. You know, with Accessibility's AI powered solution, every 24 hours it does a scan of a website to be able to fix different holes and things that might be broken or that change or that are new to it, and to address those things. So it's when a website does come up on Accessibility that was once accessible, but then becomes inaccessible, it's an opportunity for the community to speak up. And then we can reach out to that company, that website, and let them know that they need to address it and give them an opportunity to address it, which is, we're all on this journey together, and we want to make the internet more accessible. That's kind of how it has to be done.
How will websites be able to become a part of Access Find?
So that's still, we're still figuring out all the details on that, but they're going to have to pass a particular audit test or multiple audit tests. And those audit tests basically use the WCAG guidelines to find out if you meet accessibility guidelines. And then once that is, it's accessibility, Access Find is 100% not going to just be accessibility websites. It's going to be any and all website that meet accessibility guidelines will be welcomed, and we're excited to have as many websites as possible. You know, if we can have all 2% of websites on the internet that meet accessibility guidelines a part of Access Find, that would be a dream come true. And obviously we want to get that 2% a lot higher in the years to come.
I think you just made a very important point that needs to be emphasized again, that this is not just to be a platform for websites that use Accessibility. There are a variety of audit systems that one can use to see how accessible their website is. Accessibee has one called ACE. And if you go to ace.accessibee.com, you can test your website. You can plug your website into that, and you can put the web address in, and you can get an audit report and have it even emailed to you. It's free. And there are other places that do it as well. They all do basically the same thing. They look for the accessibility features that come under the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, what the World Wide Web Consortium suggests are the things that need to be in an accessible website. But some do a better job of explaining what they discover than others. I've seen a couple that aren't very easy to read, whereas ACE tends to be pretty easy to read, but they're looking for the same thing. It isn't biased in that sense. But at the same time, websites are dynamic. And that was kind of what I was asking about, that if a website goes up into AccessFind because it is found to be accessible, but then later someone goes and tries to use that website because they found it through AccessFind, and it isn't accessible anymore, I gather you're saying there's going to be a way that they can notify someone of the lack of access and it can be addressed.
There's a report feature, and we're still testing out all those things within the beta surveys we're doing with our founding members. But yes, there 100% is a component of reporting when a website goes from accessible to inaccessible. Or a lot of the times when it comes to accessibility, a person reports an accessibility issue, but it ends up becoming an issue on their end with their technology. Mm-hmm. Or things of that nature, which is always interesting to be able to provide learning opportunities, both to the website or to the user of the website.
Yeah, I've found instances where people say that Accessibee or other systems that make websites accessible aren't working, when in reality it isn't the accessibility aspect of it. It's the user way error. They're using it. It's the user error or user problems or user something. And it is important to recognize that there are ways for the system to break down at both ends. If someone wants to explore getting their website into AccessFind, how do they do that?
So on AccessFind, even if you go there right now, there's a way to list your website. There's an option.
What's the web address for AccessFind?
Accessfind.com.
Okay.
And then you go there and you can kind of learn more about what AccessFind's about. There's a promotional video, but then there's also a way to join as a founding member, but also, and to list your website. So we're actually getting those every single day.
Is there a charge for that?
Zero charge. It's completely free. AccessFind is not going to be like Google or Yahoo. There'll be zero advertisements. It's just all about making an easier search and more confident search for users with disabilities to access accessible and usable websites.
It's going to be pretty exciting, and I'm really anxious to see it go live and to see people start to use it. And it'll be a lot of fun. It's been a long time coming, and so it will be great to have a way to do web searches and have pretty good confidence that you're looking at websites that are accessible. You and I know full well, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners don't, how much of a challenge it is to go deal with websites, especially when you find inaccessibility. I had a survey that was sent to me by our health provider 2 weeks ago, and I've seen this happen many times. So it's a survey. They wanted to know my perceptions of things regarding Kaiser. At least I assume that's what the survey wanted. And the reason I say it's I assume is because it started out by saying, do you feel positive about Kaiser? I think it was, or negative. And I clicked positive. And then it took me to a web page. So that was in the email. So it took me to a web page. And the first thing on the web page was I had to accept the terms and conditions or click on something. And that something wasn't a link. It was in no way labeled. There was no way to click on it with my keyboard or any of the features that I had. And I couldn't go any further with the survey. And I see that all the time.
It's frustrating.
Yeah. And it is so unnecessary because it would be so easy to address. And I mention it because I did send an email back to the survey people and have heard nothing. That's why I keep asking about how we get more into the conversation, because the reality is that to make websites usable for all of us is not that complicated to do today.
It isn't, but it's one of those things we have to do educational awareness campaigns, not only for persons with disabilities, but for small businesses to let them know that this is an option. It's an option that can allow them to get and better serve all of their visitors. And that excites me. And I know we've got a lot to do around education and around awareness. And having this conversation today is one of those things that, you know, it's got to start somewhere.
It does. And it has to continue. And I think it will. It's a matter of continuing the conversation and becoming visible. And we will continue to do that. I'm sorry?
Well, I very much look forward to doing it with you, Michael.
Well, I as well. I think we are making a difference, and we're going to continue to do that. Do you have a way, if people want to reach out to you and ask you questions about Access Finder or anything like that, that they can do that?
You can email me at josh.basil, that's B as in boy, A, S as in Sam, ILE at gmail.com. That's my email address. Feel free to message me.
Great. Well, I want to thank you again for being here. And I want you to come back as often as you want. When you have things you want to talk about, let me know. Because that's the only way we're going to have the conversation continue, and we're going to make it happen. Accessibe has this goal still of making the internet fully accessible by 2025. That's a pretty ambitious goal, but we have a few years yet to go. So if we do it by the end of 2025, we got 4 years and a month. So let's see what we can do. But we have to start somewhere, as you said.
And Michael, it's always a pleasure. Everything that you do and the hard work you do, and it's fun being on this journey with you.
And it's got to be fun. Otherwise, why do it? You know, life's an adventure, and so it is. It's a lot of fun. Well,
fun,
Josh.
And meaningful is what it's all about.
Indeed. Absolutely. Well, Josh, thank you for being with us on Unstoppable Mindset. And again, for anyone listening, we hope that you'll go to the website, michaelhingson.com/podcast, michaelhingson.com/podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast. You can do it through any podcast host that you normally go to, and wherever you found this podcast, we hope that you will at least give us a 5-star rating. And reach out to us and let us know if there's anything that you're interested in hearing or knowing more about, or any comments that you have about our podcast today. You can reach out to me, Michael, H-I, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-H-I, at Accessibe, A-C-C-E-S-S-I-B-E.com. I will respond to emails. So we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your thoughts. If you know anyone who should be a guest on our show, please let us know. Let them know. Have them reach out. And we hope that you'll join us in future episodes of Unstoppable Mindset.
You have been listening to the Unstoppable Mindset podcast. Thanks for dropping by. I hope that you'll join us again next week and in future weeks for upcoming episodes. To subscribe to our podcast and to learn about upcoming episodes, please visit www.michaelhingson.com/podcast. Michael Hingson is spelled M-I-C-H-A-E-L-H-I-N-G-S-O-N. While you're on the site, please use the form there to recommend people who we ought to interview in upcoming editions of the show. And also, we ask you and urge you to invite your friends to join us in the future. If you know of anyone or any organization needing a speaker for an event, please email me at speaker@michaelhingson.com. I appreciate it very much. To learn more about the concept of blinded by fear, please visit www.michaelhingson.com/blinded by fear. And while you're there, feel free to pick up a copy of my free ebook entitled Blinded by Fear. The Unstoppable Mindset podcast is provided by AccessCast, an initiative of Accessibe, and is sponsored by Accessibe. Please visit www.accessibe.com. Accessibe is spelled A-C-C-E-S-S-I-B-E. There you can learn all about how you can make your website inclusive for all persons with disabilities and how you can help make the internet fully inclusive by 2025. Thanks again for listening. Please come back and visit us again next week.